Hello, heroes, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. My guest today is Fatima Abdulkarim, the co-founder of Beit Biut, a nonprofit organization that produces educational and recreational LARPs in Palestine. They've done massive historical LARPs like the Tribes, in which conflict is resolved by dancing, internationally produced events like Halat Hizar, which we'll talk about more in this episode, and lots of smaller one-shot games in community spaces, classrooms, and refugee camps. Beit Biut is doing some amazing work, and I am thrilled to share it with you. I'd like to ask you about kind of the origin story of Beit Biut, because it's, I don't know, there's just so much like happenstance and like delightful coincidence in it. I really enjoy that story.
Well, it's a remarkable story for my experience with LARP as well. This all started from a small chat. It was small because it was short, but it was big because it lasted for at least 6 years, 7 years now. It was a small chat over some drinks in December 2010. I think it was December. I'm just going to go ahead and say that because I remember it was very cold outside and we were sitting inside one of the old places in Bir Zeit city in Palestine. We were sitting, myself, my partner, together with Martin Nielsen, one of the more active LARPers from Norway, with his wife and another friend who introduced us. The chat about LARP was essentially about how educating it is and how inclusive this can be. That he also handed us a book about LARP in English, about LARP and education. At that point, I wasn't too sure if the setting was fictional or real. That's how immersive the subject was. Yes. Yeah, it took us a few weeks from there to put up the first steps towards introducing LARP to the local community here in Palestine. A few other more weeks into 2011, we held our first workshops and we had our first mistake. We introduced LARP to drama and theater students, thinking that they would be the perfect candidates who would understand what we were talking about. And I think that was when we realized that this is not a special or an exclusive thing. This was a really open and extrovert experience for people to come in. And it's you don't need to have a special background to be a LARPer. And that's what made it a best set-off for us. Because we learned immediately from our first mistake and we did the workshops again. We targeted more youth. We spoke to more people. We started introducing LARP in workshops that we carried out in other youth activities that we did. So not only did we bring in people, especially for workshops at LARPs, we also carried out mini LARPs and workshops for role-playing in other youth activities that we already were involved in. Soon after that, we organized our first international LARP. It was a Palestinian-Norwegian marriage, and this is a new pivotal point in our LARP. We organized a wedding, a three-day LARP for a wedding of a Palestinian woman with a Norwegian man. When they met in Norway and decided they want to carry on their lives together through marriage, they were subject to some criteria, let's say, by the bride's family. And that's when the LARP starts. And the workshops that came along also exposed what it means to have different experiences, different cultures, and social spheres coming together into one setting. Sometimes you don't understand what's going on, but you go along until you find your spot. And this is what the LARP that was titled Till Death Do Us Apart was about. On the organizational level, this LARP was also pivotal because it introduced us to different world, to different LARP scenes in the world, especially in Scandinavia. Many people came from Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Germany, the UK, and joined this LARP. We were able to see new styles in LARPing. And that was very, very helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, it'd be interesting to talk with someone from Europe about what kinds of new things they were exposed to as a result of playing as well, right? There must have been some of that, oh, I never thought of that before, or that was unexpected. I think it's really interesting how many of the Palestinian LARPers in Till Death Do Us Part were first timers. Like, to just jump into a 3-day kind of super realistic genre LARP from having done little to nothing before. Like, I think that's amazing. I wonder what that was like.
Yeah, this is why I think after having a series of workshops, like with some people, I was surprised actually for the sign up of Till Death Do Us Apart, mostly were first time LARPers from Palestine. And it was very nice to see how everybody actually got into the simple play pretend character building and relationships that the setting offered the people. This is why for us it was another pivotal point. It functioned very, very nicely into putting people in contact with what their characters or what they can actually play out with different people. To see styles of different players coming in and out. This was another good test also for workshopping. You know, dealing with and debriefing, dealing with characters and building relationships and understanding the context, because most of the realistic genres, the social and political genres that we play into a lot require a lot of contextualization. The workshops really help us through, and we've developed so much work around those two aspects. One is the workshops of prior to the game and the debrief, and two was the mechanics inside the game. Mechanics that include stuff like the black box or creating a safe space, monologues, you know, some of the techniques that generally played into the dynamics of the game and created more intimacy within the game, that it went so natural.
Oh, that's so neat. And then you carry that with you to every other LARP that you do.
Absolutely. Yes. We it's very important for us to work on the structures of those LARPs that we're playing, especially ones that we're focusing on, because most of the LARPs we are playing here in Palestine are social and political. Many of them focus on breaking down stereotypes, especially on gender and power relations. Some of them are educational, like about the political system in Palestine, about different social problems, including violence, sexuality, dealing with topics that I think are still tabooed in within the Palestinian community. But through LARP, you give people an excuse to talk about them and to diffuse some of the tension.
Yeah, that alibi to put something at the forefront, which people are obviously thinking about, even if they don't have the tools to talk about it explicitly.
Yes, that was actually one of the things that carried our community from a small interest group, just an ad hoc interest group of people walking in and out, to now an organization. That story is actually also worthy of some personal remarks that we were able to gather.
Can you expand on that, on personal remarks?
The thing is, we started calling friends and friends of friends and inviting them to come to LARPs, play along with us and give feedback. This was very constructive way because in a way we developed a more harmonious group of people who were interested in LARP. But more and more people walked in and out, so it wasn't really compulsory. It was something that you would do just because you would like to do it. There was no obligation to it. Slowly, some of us decided to take on a more serious level, let's say, about LARP and turning it into an educational tool. Actively seeking, number one, an immersive experience for people to enjoy, fictional settings and enjoy discovering and exploring, walking through new venues in life and understanding what openness really means outside of being just a slogan. We exited the slogans and the rhetoric into putting things into practice through LARP. The other thing was that we are still actively seeking adding LARP to the mainstream education in Palestine, which I think is a very helpful tool for children in Palestine. But along the way, emerging from an interest group into a structured organization that is completely run on voluntary basis, by the way, was quite a long way. Throughout this journey, we faced many challenges, and we decided to actually face those challenges at some point when things were about to break down. Something promising was happening. It was a LARP community. Something risky was happening, and that was people falling apart, people losing interest, people pulling out, and that was not so. That was not relaxing for the community as a whole, because the whole point was to be completely relaxed in discussing social issues, political issues, being actually open to new and different opinions. So around 2015, we started talking about those problems, and we've identified most of them. Most of them were related to, I can list down a few of those challenges that we were facing. Most of them were related to access to information. The friendly and harmonious structure that we started with emerged into a more, a structure with some individuals with more status and power than others. They were more in contact with partners around the world. So, you know, this affected decision making and consequences of those decisions. This affected transparency. As a group, we were doing so much, but nobody was obliged to report anything to anybody, and there was no accountability.
Right, so you have a lot of confusion and a lot of, what did we decide? Was anyone in the last meeting? Did anyone write that down?
Yeah, more or less that. People felt excluded as a result, and that was the exact opposite of what LARP was about, of why we started and why some people took it more seriously than others. Internally, we were looking at things and, you know, we were whispering bad thoughts. But yeah, more and more people were walking out, and that was not helping. We could have easily broke apart, but we had more people complaining and wanting to plan things ahead. So we moved on. We were able to see that we did not have consistency, we did not have planning, we were not being so inclusive, and that people were getting tired of this. So we decided to move on and, you know, regain this sense of belonging that held our initial and the goals that set us off. And the reason was basically out of interest. This was important to us.
So in the book that you shared with me, The Birth of LARP in the Arab World, Hilda Levin's essay in there is about the idea of just organizing LARP as strengthening a civil society. And she talks about like almost any kind of organizing. If you're doing some kind of organization, if you're like doing that kind of community work, then that in itself is strengthening. And I wonder, what about LARP in particular do you feel has those kinds of qualities or advantages or skill building?
I have to say it's bigger than that. In my view, I see LARP as boundless creativity because it sets off people towards their own worlds, let alone speaking about groups or the civil society as a whole. So like a snowball effect, it safeguards those ideas that we have been developing, because you give people chance to see other perspectives and to respect them and to live them, basically. So I think it's very important. I'm very happy that our group decided to move on with this process and not drop it down. I'm very happy now, and I'm absolutely very proud of what we've been doing. Because this has affected me personally, most of my friends, many people that I know who have been LARPing, not just for fun, but also for, you know, its educational and therapeutical value. This has helped people go through rough times. This has helped teams in different organizations to bond, because we've used this for team building in different NGOs. This has also helped children in release, because we've worked with children especially in areas that are suffering directly and on a daily basis the violence of settlers in areas that are now classified as Area C under Israeli control, according to the interim Oslo Accords that govern the Palestinian Authority and the situation here in Palestine since 1993, and that come right under the fire of the Israeli army as well. This has helped us a lot do what we're doing, and this has helped the civil society definitely, and is still helping. What we're doing is still limited, but our hopes are really unlimited, and our hope is to go as far as, you know, the mainstream and to make LARP an educational tool in our schools in Palestine, because this way it will be open to most people. And it's not just a thing for children, it's a thing for adults. And this is why we're having our Beit Beit Educational LARP Festival next week in Bethlehem.
Oh, that's so exciting. It's so soon.
Yeah, it is.
But that's been a long time in organizing, right?
Yes, we've been organizing that at least for the past 6 months, and now things are just setting to motion, and people are doing their best to finish the program items and the preparations. We're doing this in collaboration with the pedagogy department at Bethlehem University and the Darul Kalima Community College for Arts and Culture in Bethlehem as well. So we have two venues in addition to another guest house that we will be holding some games and workshops at. Our guests will include school teachers, school students, university students, and members of the faculties of both the Darul Kalima College and Bethlehem University.
Awesome. You talk about partnerships a lot in the book too, and in particular international partnerships as being like just absolutely vital to your organization. And I wonder, how do you keep those alive, particularly, you know, across time zones and continents?
Well, when we decided to become an organization, we decided that the financial struggle will not stop us. So we're doing it all on voluntary basis. we've developed a structure that allowed this voluntary system, the volunteering system, to become the way that the organization works. So people would rotate and do different things at their convenience, like translate LARPs, carry out workshops, and invite different people speaking about LARPs or arranging different activities. This would have not been possible without maintaining some of the resources, not just of the individuals who are devoting their time voluntarily, but also with the partnerships of three main partners. In order to help the volunteering system work and overcome the financial stress that was coming along with all this work that we are doing, we stuck to three main partnerships that are really strategic and I'm very, very appreciative of. These were a Norwegian LARP group, Danish LARP group, and Finnish LARPers. They've helped us in different ways. These partnerships are not just about working together. They have affected our lives on a personal level, created lasting friendships, you know, bonds that are, you know, quite unique and distinctive. The first one was when we played out Till Death Do Us Apart, and when we were introduced to the Norwegian LARP scene. This has brought us into the LARP design world, to workshopping, to what it means to be, to meet and collide with different LARPing styles and different game mastering. It was really important for us because, evidently enough, the importance comes because from that point on, we scrolled on in a series of other partnerships. One of the biggest was Halat Hisar, a state of siege that we organized with the Finnish LARP group and played twice in Helsinki. It's a very special game. It's a political game that mirrors the situation in Palestine politically into a fictional setting where Euralia occupies Finland and divides it in geographically and politically. And this has opened us to, yeah, more style, more LARP design, and more contextualization, because we were faced with politics. This has also set our tune to more realistic, educational, social, and political LARPs that characterize our work. So this was also, you know, very, it took us a long time. And in my opinion, the work of our Finnish partners, and especially Kaisa Kangas, in writing the history and the game world is quite astonishing, and it's a masterpiece that I really, really am very proud of.
I just want to say I'm super interested in the way that the alternate history of Finland and this fictional nation of Euralia was kind of developed, because, you know, right at the time when the trend was to not have a lot of lore and to really let people make stuff up and to have it be like co-creative, there's such an intentional design choice in this, in Halat Hisar, to say, no, I actually don't want people who have no experience of occupation to just draw on whatever they think it's like to make shit up. And the way that they integrated Finland's history with Russia and their like history of actual nationalism and history of liberation, but just changing that rather than making something up whole cloth, or like, that is just, you're right, it really is like masterful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's not about us living a unique experience. It's not like we are living in somewhere that is so different from the post-colonial machines that are running across continents and in all of the world. We are not a unique case, unfortunately. We are living in a post-colonial era where circumstances are very, very similar when you look down at the joints and roots of those machines that are running through our education systems, financial, economic, and even social tributes. So this game was, well, I think I wrote this in a book. Yes, I did. I wrote this in the book when we were documenting Halat Hisar, and I keep repeating this, and I would like to share it with you, because Around 2007, when the Israeli left-wing party Kadima, which means forward, was established, they issued their own political declaration, the manifesto, and published it. Two Palestinian artists took this. Actually, one is a philosophy teacher at university, and another is an artist. He took this political declaration and transformed it completely, just by replacing the word Israel by Palestine, and vice versa, and Israeli for Palestinian, and settlers for refugees. And, you know, it was published in a newspaper in 2007 as a declaration of a new Palestinian political party. I remember very clearly I visited the artist and I looked at this manifesto, and I was, you know, it was quite funny at the beginning when I was like, ha, ha, yeah, completely unrealistic setting of words. And then a few lines down that manifesto, I felt from my stomach that I was disgusted by how fascist that is. Just to realize that this is something that I'm facing in my real life, just the other way around. It's not Palestinian. This was one of the ways that I always describe my relationship with Halat Hisar through. It was an experience that really swept me off. I don't have to normalize with all this hatred around me. And then we created this alternative history for Finland that was, like you mentioned, completely taken from the history of Finland and the history of the region as a whole, and played into a little bit that made it a bit more fictional and realistic, you know, in a way that was very, very smart and coherent. It just needed to put a context, to lay out the map that led to the situation of the status quo. And then the players were completely free to do whatever they want. But in both runs, players, even the ones who were designed or informed in a way to be collaborative, decided to resist. To resist the fact that their personal and human dignity was harmed. Not in any different way. So I think this puts us in the same circle, interfering and interacting within the same political and social circles in a way or another. And then after Halat Hisar, we've developed a series of LARPs that were with our Danish partners, the third pillar of our partnerships, and these were focused on children. This developed to become one of our strengths, and it is one of the points besides gender stereotypes and power relations that is our main focus.
Right, and this is part of or in cooperation with the Play for Life program, and involves LARPing with a lot of kids, including kids who are currently in refugee camps. I'd really like to know what working with that population is like.
It varies. It's really not one single experience that is similar to all others. Every time it's quite different. But what's in common is that those children are always open to becoming somebody else and always open to learning. It was not me who was mostly involved in children's LARPs. I started off with a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon, working with some children, but here in Palestine, other friends and colleagues were working with children. When we sit in and share notes and talk about it, what I hear mostly is that children are more open for imagination. This is their perfect setting. It's play pretend. It's their sporadic growth mechanism, and it comes very natural that they understand much more than adults what the techniques are and what the games can be like and the lessons learned.
Right. It's coming to them more naturally, or they get something out of it more naturally.
And what kinds of changes do you see kids go through when they get to engage with stuff like this?
Some of the groups that we have been visiting frequently can tell us an answer to this, because we have not yet reached the point where we can measure the impact of LARPs that we are playing with children on them. But these small communities and this small experience that has been repeated with the same group of children is telling us more about how their internal capacities are really opened and turned around through LARP. It's not just very educational for them. It's an immersive experience that opens them up towards imagination. And by that I mean they start thinking more and more about what they want to be and what they want to do in the future. That future could be a week from now, or when they are in sixth grade, for example, that's when they switch schools to move to middle school, for example, and have to go a bit farther. And it could be when they grow up and go to university. It's really affecting the way they are thinking about their inner capabilities. And I can see that evidently in this group that we are working with. And I hope it continues, actually. It's one of the things that we want to do as a group. We want to develop tools that can measure the impact of LARP.
Yeah, that's a slippery fish. It really is very difficult, right? Because we're sort of doing this thing because we know it's powerful. We know it's transformative. We don't know exactly how, and we really struggle with how to tell or how to predict how it's going to change people.
Yeah, I think the coming festival next week, the Beit Biyut Educational LARP Festival, is going to help us set off on that track. What we want to do from that moment on is think about more ways about how to make this measurable. And in order to convince more people that this is completely worth it, it's just like physical education and sports and music and all forms of creative thinking, to introduce LARP into mainstream education.
I really admire your passion and the passion that I hear from a lot of folks in your community. I think I see this statement over and over again in the book, that this is not just a hobby and this is not just play. This is something that we need. This is a need we're filling. Would you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't play just because it's a sort of pleasure. We actually play because it's creating something for us. It's giving us power to change. We are being realistic. We are playing super realistic social problems out and trying to solve them and trying to see. We're not inventing the wheel, by the way. This is so important for us. It's very transformative for children who really need a change in fate, a change in, they don't deserve what they are going through. They deserve a much better situation. And I think LARP is not just giving them this for an hour or so. It's not just creating an alternative, a pseudo-consciousness or an alternative reality that is non-existent after the game is over. It is giving them power to test their internal capabilities and open up their minds and their cognitive abilities towards seeing the world in a different way. This is why this is why I play. And I'm sure that if you ask this question across our community, you will find similar, you know, you will find answers that will rotate along the same sphere, because this is giving us strength to change people's minds. It's also about the perception of how we can see things differently. And this is what makes me very happy to do this.
I mean, you're talking about potentials, right? About being open up, not just to alternatives in the moment, but to potentials in the future. And these sort of like turning points.
Absolutely. It's spreading. It's spreading. We're very happy. We're talking to groups from Jordan, from Tunisia, and even in Syria. There is at least one person left, but he is up for it. This is a way in which we look out at the world in a different, completely different setting. And it's not just momentarily. It continues because it lives inside us. It continues because it shows us that there is a different way. Like I said in the beginning, we are totally leaving the rhetoric and the slogans and the cliché expressions behind. And we're taking this to a new serious level. This is why we are actually having this, our second festival, focusing on educational LARPs.
Right. You know, one of the questions I was going to ask is about the BitBeaut logo, which is this sort of butterfly. And I was going to be like, where does that come from? What does that symbolize? But now I feel like I kind of get it a little bit.
Yeah, it's a face and wings. That's what it's supposed to mean. And the colors should be a mix that merge genders together, you know, or not genders together. I'm completely against stigmatizing genders by color, but it's the notion of pink and blue that are always separating people when they are merged on the wings of this butterfly from in the back of the head or this face in our logo. It's just a merger of so many ideas that storm into our heads, I guess, every day. I'm not a fan of this logo, but it was the choice of the community. So I'm not going to defend it, but I'm going to say how it makes me feel.
Well, you know, speaking of your community, I know a lot of people who, when they found out about stuff like Halat Hizar or the tribes, actually this game, which I think it's really cool because conflicts are solved by dancing and lots of other reasons too. When you think about the creative output of your community right now, what is most exciting to you?
There are so many things that are going around, especially now this week ahead of the festival. So many things that are coming up to the surface that show me how creative and intuitive this is becoming. We have dozens of LARPs that are written by Palestinians, and they are focusing on issues that are concerning to a large group of people. For example, gender, politics, education, trust, and conflict resolution. These LARPs are being translated. They will be put on an online library through BaitBeaut.com, and they are establishing our own literature on LARP in Arabic language as well as in English to allow this to rapidly grow into LARP communities in the Arab world, because what we are creating is not the wheel. What we are creating is a glossary of games. So we're playing them out. We're in a schedule at least twice a month. People are testing their own games, and we're creating an online library for everybody to use. Once this is achieved, we can also think about classifying them into resources and themes. It's true that we are mostly playing realistic genre, but also we are working with themes that break down stereotypes, that talk to children and their interests. We are developing a very nice and beautiful edge in creating props, and we are making children do that as well, which is showing a very nice community building. It's developing this creativity cycle that starts with one thing and ends up doing so many other things, I guess.
And there's so many different, like, little avenues for creativity when you're putting together stuff like that. Like you say, prop making, or all the creativity that goes into organizing any kind of event.
There's also lots of creativity with the translation of LARPs from all over the world. into the Palestinian context or the Arabic context, because it's translation and localization of those worldwide games it's actually cementing and helping bring together LARP styles and gaming styles that are completely different sometimes, but they find their spot in our community because we're very young, but it's still it finds its spot because we are still testing and experimenting with those ideas.
Well, I think it's wonderful that so many kind of worldwide LARPs are coming to your community, and I really, really look forward to the proliferation of Palestinian LARPs in international communities. I can't wait until that is something that I can access with my home group or at a convention in North America.
Me too.
Oh, that's so exciting. Well, gosh, thank you so much for joining me. If my listeners want to keep up with you and with Beat Beaut and just to know what you're up to, is there an easy way for them to do that?
Yes, we are on Facebook. I guess if you're on Facebook, you'll find us. Just type Beat Beaut, BaitByout.
Excellent. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So people can find it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again. Oh my gosh. And just, yeah, have a wonderful day. Enjoy dinner.
Thank you. You too. Thanks a lot. You too. Have a great weekend.
Well, thanks to Fatima. And as always, thank you for listening. If you have thoughts on today's episode, remember that you can email me, that's backstorypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me @backstorycast. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. You can go to oneshotpodcast.com to find more great shows like Neoscum. Neoscum is a future fantasy comedy podcast featuring 5 Chicago improvisers antagonizing their way through the role-playing classic Shadowrun. It follows a group of misfits and outsiders. A chromehead decker, a teenage candy junkie klepto, a kids show wizard with a petulant thirst for adventure, and the nastiest trucker this side of the Robo Mason Dixon. Join the irascible Neo Scum crew as they dole out street justice to every deed they encounter, whether they deserve it or not. You can find Neo Scum and more at oneshotpodcast.com. Music for Backstory is provided by Ujiko. The track is called Thinking of You, and you can hear more at soundcloud.com/UJICO. Talk to you later, heroes.